Hi, it's Michael Senoff here, and I'm the founder and developer of WeightedHands.com. I'm a busy professional, a husband, and a father of two young boys. I started making and using Weighted Hands because I wanted a way to burn a ton of calories in as little time as possible, but I didn't want to get injured doing it. I wanted to eat whatever I wanted without feeling hungry or deprived, and I wanted to be able to maintain my weight. I wanted a low-impact workout so I could save my knees for later. A workout that required no gym memberships, no stair climbers, no treadmills, no ellipticals. I wanted something that feels easy, but could get my heart rate high enough for ongoing conditioning. Well, you're in luck, because many of my buying customers have been using Heavy Hands for over 20 years, and they've been generous enough to share their personal stories with you. You'll hear me interview them on how they got started walking with Heavy Hand weights, what it did for their bodies, both in terms of musculature and weight reduction. You'll also learn about their favorite workouts, tips and tricks to burn the most amount of calories in the fastest time possible. So enjoy the interview. Now let's get going. Hi, this is Michael Senoff with Michael Senoff's WeightedHands.com. The title of this interview is called An Inside Look at the Inventor of Heavy Hands, His Favorite Exercises, and How Heavy Hands Has Changed the Way We Age. Neil had struck up a friendship with Dr. Schwartz many years ago after reading how the doctor used heavy hands to decrease his pulse rate from 60 beats per minute to 38 beats per minute and his body fat from 14% to only 4%. Neil had only heard of elite athletes with numbers like that, not some guy in his 50s, so he contacted the doctor to find out more. That was the beginning of a lifelong friendship that would change the way Neil viewed aging. Dr. Leonard Schwartz didn't believe that the musculoskeletal system needed to decline as we age. He believed that working all four limbs at the same time instead of just two would allow feedback loops from the heart to the muscle to form and strengthen, preventing sudden overloads on the heart while also preventing muscular decline in strength and movement. And in this audio interview, you'll get an inside look at the inventor of the Heavy Hands workout, Dr. Leonard Schwartz, from one of his friends, along with tips of the best exercises to do with the weights and how Dr. Schwartz intended they be used to improve life. You'll also hear why Dr. Schwartz called swimmers and cyclists gravity cheaters and how to use the resistance of gravity as a way to make workouts even more beneficial. You'll also learn why Dr. Schwartz didn't believe you needed to lift heavy weights to improve health and strength, and a quick look at how he came up with his Heavy Hands fitness concept. You'll also hear about debunking the hero myth that you need to push through the pain when exercising, also what your body is really telling you and what to do instead. You'll also learn the real problem with repetitive exercise and how simple changes to your Heavy Hands workout can result in a whole new fitness routine with changes in speed, cadence, angle, direction, and weight. You'll also hear what Dr. Schwartz considers to be one of the most important concepts to learn about fitness, long strength training, what that means, and how to make it part of your routine. You also get a step-by-step look at how to do one of the single most difficult movements of heavy hands and why you may want to give it a try. You also learn how long it usually takes to build a virtual fat-burning furnace so you're controlling your weight with energy, strength, and stamina without really trying. As a hypnosis practitioner, Neil works with clients to improve their health and well-being, and he says he recommends the Heavy Hands workout to all his clients because it's so versatile. It doesn't matter if you're already an elite athlete or a couch potato. No matter where you are in life, there's a place for you to start and get immediate benefits from the Heavy Hands workout. Even in his 80s, Dr. Schwartz was able to do things most people in their 30s would be happy to be doing. And in this interview, you'll hear all about him. Now let's get going. I was really excited to get your call yesterday because you shared with me that you had a lot of personal contact with the great Leonard Schwartz, inventor and developer of the original Heavy Hands. And first, I'd just like you to share with any new Heavy Hand enthusiast or existing longtime member some of the things you learned about this great man. Why don't you start off, just tell us who you are, where you're located, and how did it all start, your first introduction to Heavy Hands and maybe that first time you contacted Len?
My name is Neil Myers, and I presently live in Mystic, Connecticut, which is a very beautiful part of the world just on the eastern seaboard here, which is famous for its Mystic Seaport and village and national treasure.
And the movie Mystic Pizza.
We know it well. It's just up the road from us, so it's literally about a mile down the road. Exactly right. I play that film endlessly in there.
I'm sure they do.
And the time I first spoke with Len Schwartz, I was living, as I had been, in New York. And I lived for a long time in New York. Well, I had two homes. I think he liked Florida in the winter. I think when I contacted him at that time of the year, he was in Pittsburgh. Now, how it came about was I've been interested in exercise in various forms for a long period of time. And I was interested in many different forms of exercise. I'd experimented with all sorts of things.
Did you have a specific reason? Were you in sports? Did you want to lose weight? What was the deal?
I didn't need to lose weight. I'd always been on the skinny side, if anything. I was involved in various sports. I was at the time an instructor of a rather unusual martial art called Sistema, which is a Russian martial art. And I just generally had an interest in wanting to stay healthy and mobile. And I explored lots of obscure pieces of information. And at the time that I was investigating Heavy Hands, it was fairly obscure. For example, in obscure information, I was familiar with some of the work of Pavel Satsulin in the early days when he wasn't so focused on kettlebells but more focused on other things. And he mentioned Len Schwartz, some of the stuff of Matt Fury I'd looked at before, and all sorts of other things with elasticated bands and tensions and various things. And what I was coming more and more to was that probably one wanted to stay mostly away from machines. The old joke used to be that if you're in a gym and you saw more machines than weights and you weren't standing in the cafeteria, you should probably leave. And, of course, that's no longer true because, you know, every gym you go in is packed with weights. And it led me by a circuitous route to the work of Len Schwartz. And the first book I got was, I think, what is his first book, which was Heavy Hands. I think it's subtitled The Ultimate Exercise, which came out sometime in the 80s. And one of the things that is in that book is a description of his own personal measurements and development. And I was flabbergasted. I mean, I was completely nonplussed. I mean, you show, for example, in 2 years, I think it was there from 76 to 81, his pulse rate goes down from 60 to 38. His body fat percentage from 14% to 4. At that time, I wasn't aware of anybody except for elite athletes who had heart rates anything approaching those levels, let alone a man in his 50s. So I was so intrigued by this that I decided to try to track him down and talk to him, because it's my practice when I read books of people who I like and admire and hopefully are still alive, I actually try and find the authors and talk to them directly, because sometimes they have additional information that is not always available in their books. And that's when it began.
Let me ask you this. Had you gotten a pair of Heavy Hands and started using them before you contacted him and read the book?
I had. I'd already done that. I started to work with them. And I follow the recommendations very closely, and he has very specific recommendations. And at that time, there was also another book called The Heavy Hands Walking Book, which I got subsequently, which is also a good book. And I'd absolutely begun doing the exercises and the movements. And I think the very first time I worked out with Heavy Hands, I was actually surprised at how difficult I found it. Because, you know, you've got two little weights, about 2 pounds, and you think, wow, this isn't a problem. You know, you just kind of walk around, and it's like, wow. After about half a mile and then a mile of doing this, it's, wow, this is much more challenging than I thought. Basically, I mean, my routines at that point, I was doing Heavy Hands pretty much on a daily basis with weights of anywhere from 3 up to, I suppose, about 6 or 7 pounds. I like to do a lot of mine outdoors, so there's a particular lake that I like to go around that lake, varying movements. But I also did indoor work as well, and I kept that up for quite some period of time.
Good. All right, so you contacted him that first time.
Yeah, very nice guy. Very helpful. And we began a dialogue, which went on for a considerable period of time. I mean, over a succession of phone calls. And at that time, I was also in contact with some other people who were familiar with his work as well. And, you know, the more I learned about him and about what he did and about his mind, the more impressed I became, basically.
So what was Lynn's view on the apparent agelessness of the musculoskeletal system?
I would ask him about this. His view, right up until the very last years of his life, was basically the musculoskeletal system. His belief was that you could maintain it in pretty well what we would describe as pristine shape until you draw your last breath. He didn't believe it really did decline. And when I think about the single biggest thing that being with Len Schwartz has done for me is simply this. It completely changed my view of what aging means, physically at least, completely. Because, you know, I had this idea, as most of us tend to do, that, you know, sometime after 30, if you're a man, and sometimes even younger, perhaps if you're a woman, there's a slow decline into decrepitude that one tries to fight off as best one can. But this is a man whose physical capabilities increased through his 50s and was maintained through his life. And so it just changed my whole view about what being old actually meant. One of my favourite tricks is when I'm with people is I have Len's second book, The Heavy Hands Walking Book, and there's a picture of him on the front walking into the woods. And what I do is I cover up his face with my thumb and I say to people, how old do you think this guy is based upon his body? And normally they'll tell me somewhere around 30, 40. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I take my thumb away, and it's clear Len's considerably older than that in that book. And people are flabbergasted because one of his little sayings was, bald head, bold bod. And I think he kind of proved that, really, through his life, because as far as I'm aware, he was able to do things in his 80s that most men in their 30s would be envious of physically.
All right, you have a bullet here. Starting out exercising at 50 in his motivations, what would you want to say about that?
Well, I asked him, you know, why, and he was very clear about this. He basically said that both of his parents had died fairly young, that he thought he personally had pretty bad genetics, although subsequently what we now learn about genetics might have modified his view, but nonetheless, that was his primary motivation to seek physical fitness. And I think at the time that he started to do that, the most popular trend was jogging, running, and that's where he started. And the only reason I understand he even investigated heavy hands or discovered it is because he injured himself and he was trying to find a way to maintain his levels of physical fitness whilst he was recovering from an injury. And that's where the heavy hands begins. And so his goal, he describes it as a narcissistic goal, but that's a bit of an unkind judgment on himself. But his goal was basically to keep himself alive and healthy far beyond the years of his parents, and he certainly succeeded in that.
What was his view of gravity cheating exercise?
Oh, sometimes I used to talk to him about swimmers and cyclists, and he said, oh yes, he used to call them the gravity cheaters. And I would say, what do you mean by that? And, you know, he called them the gravity cheaters, and his point was basically that gravity should aid you in exercise. It should be one of the things that you use to your advantage. And one of the reasons he felt that swimmers had to do so much lap work and things is because they're cheating gravity, similarly with cyclists. I used to ask him about things, for example, like rowing and cycling, and he used to say to me, these aren't exercises, these are means of transport.
Yeah, that's true in a way.
And I would say, well, what do you mean by that? And he would say, well, nobody sat and thought about whether this was a good exercise or not. They just found that they enjoyed certain physical benefits as a result of doing them, but they weren't designed as exercises. And so consequently, they have various shortcomings. So, for example, you know, obviously, you know, in cycling, one is almost exclusively using just two limbs. And in rowing, even though one is using four limbs, and Len himself likes to row, I believe. That was one of his pastimes and activities. You also were putting the back in strange positions, and he didn't like anything where you were doing the same movement again and again and again and again and again. He didn't really feel that was what exercising was really about. And so, you know, whenever I think about it, I always think about any movement and say, well, is this designed for exercise, or is it designed as a means of transportation, or is it designed, say, for example, sports can be a form of exercise, but usually they're a game designed to play and amuse and entertain oneself. They aren't designed as an exercise. So whereas one might get an exercise benefit as a result of playing certain sports, almost invariably they'll have weaknesses, shortcomings, areas which are either overdeveloped, asymmetrically developed, underdeveloped, put through extreme motions, which for the sake of the sport, that have nothing really to do with exercise or the health benefits of it at all.
So you have here training with heavy weights. Let's talk about that.
Well, Len was very against training with super heavy weights. He really thought that was a massively unhealthy practice. And for him, I think the heaviest weights that he ever really used, and even those only shortly, is sometimes he would take a very heavy 20, 30-pound weight, which is not considered that heavy, and do a movement where he would swing it up and down between his legs. But even that was a very small part of his exercise. I think his thinking was, for example, the kettlebell weights were far too heavy for safety and unnecessary for fitness effect. One of the things I discovered that he did was that he actually visited native peoples in different parts of the world. And he said it was really simple. He'd see them climb, jump, run, walk, throw. But if they wanted to lift a heavy weight, they'd get a friend to help them do it. Or they'd do it in a group. They'd never think of doing it themselves. He couldn't find one native peoples anywhere, he told me at least, where they spent any time sort of pumping iron and pushing weights of any type. And this is like a kind of a Viking thing. And again, that comes back to sport and entertainment, not really utility. And so he believed that fundamentally working with very heavy weights was not really a thing that was healthy and actually was not even necessary to produce levels of useful strength. And Len was really heavily into useful strength.
What are some of the flaws in certain sport-specific training?
Well, some of the things that we talked about together. So, for example, Len liked to watch boxing, which was surprising for such a gentle man, but he enjoyed his boxing. But I think he used to think, for example, that the road work that boxers did was largely a waste of time, that it didn't develop the types of stamina that they needed for their specific sport, and that it was really just history. He also, I think, he thought things like, for example, for boxers, skipping rope was largely a waste of time. It didn't really develop the things that they needed. And so he felt that heavy hands could be used for sports-specific training to develop the particular attributes required in that particular sport. And he had a list once, I don't know if I still got it, but he went through sport by sport basically to show how heavy hands could help develop certain things and how some of the practices that were common to those sports were just accidents of history or long-held tradition, but that didn't seem to have much science behind them.
From your conversations with Len, what was his views as far as keeping free of injury?
He was very strong with the idea that if it hurts, stop doing it. That was his single most important thing. So when it comes to heavy hands, I mean, most people, when they start to do heavy hands, will start to find that they're exercising their body in ways that they're not used to. And, you know, there is a sort of a hero tendency with many of us who exercise to sort of push through pain, which is another way of saying that we ignore the signals. But he was very adamant that if something was painful, stop doing it and then switch to something else. And that's one of the beauties of heavy hands. So, for example, if one's doing like a pumping action, a standard heavy hands walk, and that's starting to feel a little bit uncomfortable, then you can swap that by changing the angle, by changing the cadence, by changing the movement. You don't necessarily have to stop the whole exercise, which is one of the reasons why he didn't like, as he told me, you know, repetitive exercises which just did the same movement, because you were just forced to do the same thing again and again and again, whether it's cycling or swimming. With heavy hands, you can constantly change and modify everything, speed, cadence, angle, direction, weight. And so if you don't want to injure yourself, stop when your body's telling you it doesn't like it. I can say that I have to think about this very carefully for a second. I've never injured myself in doing heavy hands. I've injured myself doing other things, but not heavy hands, ever.
Are there advantages with heavy hands when it comes to exercising in hot and cold weather?
Yeah, I mean, Len was also had pretty strong views about this. He didn't like exercising when it was too hot, or I suppose very cold, but particularly if it was too hot. In the very hot days of the summer, he said that he thought, his view was, it was more healthy to exercise indoors, you know, if one's in an atmosphere where it's not there. But he himself, he liked to do a lot of his exercise indoors. That was partially because, particularly towards the latter years of his life, I think he was quite reclusive. For example, I would watch people exercising so-called with heavy hands, or sometimes weights. And I would even ask them about it, and they would claim it was heavy hands, but they were often just carrying the weights around, you know, not making any vertical movements. And that's not at all heavy hands. Just walking around or even running around just carrying things is not heavy hands at all. But he told me a great story where one time he was exercising outdoors and he watched a young lady who was doing this. She had these weights, which were pretty heavy. I think they were like over 5 pounds at least for heavy hands. But she was just kind of walking around with them. And he stopped and said, well, you know, that's not really very productive. And he described, and she was quite angry. And she says, well, how do you know anything about this? And he said, well, actually, I'm the inventor of this system of exercise called heavy hands. And she told him, in rather more colourful terms, to go away.
Oh, that's hilarious.
even though he was a psychiatrist, he was quite sensitive in a way. And he said, well, I never talk to anybody again. I just don't say anything to anybody anymore, whatever I see, which is remarkable. So every so often, I stop people and I've described heavy hands. But you see a lot of people walking around with weights. And you might see them every so often lift up a weight, but they don't do the heavy hands movement, which is a shame, because they're only getting a very minimal benefit. I suppose their arms will grow longer, but I don't know if they're getting a lot more benefit than that from walking around with them.
So Lynn had a fascination with exercise?
He loved exercise. He was forever exploring different means of exercising. And he had such a fertile and interesting mind that heavy hands was only one manifestation of that interest. So, for example, he developed an exercise machine called Panex, which I've never actually seen an actual machine. He described it to me. It seems like a combination of something which, almost like a frame upon which you can exercise your arms and your legs simultaneously. And in doing that, he wanted to see how much he could develop his body and what he could get to. And I think even into his 80s, he was able to do more than 60 full body pull-ups as a result of this. And he said he went from only being able to do 20, which, by the way, is the Marine standard, which is still very respectable. But he didn't feel this was good enough, and so, you know, he pushed it, and over time, not that long a time, he got to 80s. That was one, and then I think he was interested in heavy hands gloves, and then there was this very interesting isotonometrics, which he developed, which is interesting. I understand from his children, I mean, up until the very last days of his life, when, unfortunately, he was in bed, because I think he suffered from a form of cancer, and that had meant he was in bed for periods of time, he actually developed a whole exercise methodology in bed, you know, around the bed. Incredible. I mean, there are so many things that he considered and thought about in terms of exercise and fitness and health.
All right, what was his view as far as getting too big and muscular?
He had, again, fairly strong views on this. His idea was to be the strongest, most energy-efficient body in the smallest frame, by which he meant that having big muscles wasn't a good idea because you had to carry those things around all the time, which was taxing to the system. So his idea was to be very strong and have great aerobic capacity in the smallest frame possible. And one of his favourite things was he always used to talk about the pile of bricks that, you know, in a contest in which there was a huge pile of bricks that had to be moved from point A to point B by hand, he'd probably be better at doing that than almost anybody else because that was the whole of his long strength training, the capacity to take these things and consistently move them.
Did the name long strength training develop along with heavy hands?
Yes, I think it did. I mean, it was the concept that he wanted to get in people's minds, as far as I understand from talking to him, because I didn't understand what it meant at first. What does he mean by long strength? And as far as I understand it, it means this capacity to exercise strength over a long period of time, a sort of a stamina within strength. And I think by using that phrase, he was trying to distinguish two things, something which involved more or less just stamina, like, for example, marathon running or long cycling or something like that, and something that involved short bursts of explosive strength. And if one looks at athletic endeavour and sports, there isn't much that tests long strength per se. I mean, one could talk about things perhaps like certain contact sports, rugby, Aussie rules football. You know, they test strength and endurance over a period of time. But most things are fairly short bursts, and he thought that the most useful thing was to have this capacity, basically, to be able to use one's strength over time. And one of the things that he was proudest of is that as when he played out in the garden with his grandchildren, they'd get tired before he did. You know, it was the kids that got tired, not grandpa. That kind of almost encapsulates his view about these things.
How about stretching? Was he into stretching? Did he think that was smart?
No, he believed, and again, this is something where I don't completely agree with Len, but I see where he's coming from, where he was. His observation was is that more injuries were sustained through injudicious use of stretching than almost anything else that he observed. And so he kept down to just three stretches, I think. So he didn't do a lot of stretching. And I will say that as I watched him, his flexibility for a man of his age, and I saw a video of him, was not bad, but it wasn't great. I don't know, stretching is still very controversial. It's a bit tangential, but I think if he'd have looked at the work of Aaron Matz and active isolated stretching, you know, in the involved of use of very short stretches, he might have changed his views a little bit. But I think he was talking about yoga-type stretches, these very long stretching routines. He felt that, basically, if you wanted to start a heavy hands workout, you didn't need to do any stretching, you just started to do heavy hands, maybe not obviously a full pelt, you know, you build it up a little bit, but you didn't have to go through a long stretch before or after, and he actually felt that it was detrimental, so he didn't really. as far as I can tell from talking to him.
For more great interviews like this, go to Michael Senoff's weightedhands.com. Why should someone exercise with two limbs when they can exercise with four in setting up these duets? Explain that whole concept.
As I understood it from talking to Len, and probably better explained in his books than I can explain it here, but the idea is that one sets up a communication between the muscles and the heart. And these duets, this two-way communication where the heart supplies when it needs to based upon the feedback of the muscles. And he would say, for example, you know, the classic thing that where people, even if they're in quite good condition, you know, they go out in the winter to shovel their driveway and they pass out or have a heart attack. And he would say that the reason for that is because they weren't used to having both the arms and the legs working together. The heart wasn't used to that feedback loop. And so the whole idea of heavy hands is that you create those feedback loops between those different muscle groups in the lower extremities and the upper extremities back to the heart.
I mean, I can understand that maybe someone who has trained legs, they go out and shovel snow, and their heart isn't trained. What is the feedback loop? What does that mean?
Well, here's the thing. What you'll see, and this is one of the things I think he objected to about certain gym work, again, as far as I understand from talking to him, is this. People will routinely work their arms, work their legs, but they won't necessarily demand strength of them and stamina together. So when you take an activity like shoveling snow or digging a garden, you know, but take shoveling snow. Well, look at that movement of shoveling snow. You set your legs, you drop down, you pick up a weight, you move it across, and you do it again. The problem is not that the people may not have strong arms and strong legs. They may even have considerable stamina. But their body and heart is not used to all that system working together. Those communication loops of that combined effort has not been, I suppose, neurologically formed or formed in a way that the heart can handle it. So the heart says, according to Len, oh my goodness, look what's happening, this is terrible. And it says, okay, stop that, and it's overloaded. And so his notion was, is that by exercising four limbs all the time, you were constantly enforcing, reinforcing, improving those neural and muscular skeletal communication networks between the heart and other parts of the body. That's my understanding of it anyway.
Now, what's your view of the energy burned doing heavy hands properly by using four limbs compared to just two? And can you talk about the muscle of the arm? Do you know anything about the research, how a piece of muscle out of the arm can burn even more energy than a piece of muscle out of the thigh? Do you remember him saying that in the book?
He's talked about that. I mean, Len was very careful. There's so many things I admired about him. But one of the things is that he liked to back his work by research. And my understanding is he spent something upward of $750,000 of his own money establishing whether some of the things which he believed to be true were true, and to verify them by test at the University of Pittsburgh, which had quite a sophisticated sports physiology. And so that was one of those pieces of information that I believed flowed from his research. And that's one element of it, but I think there's even more to it than that. I think that working as a unit synergistically, he uses energy and oxygen measurements. There's much, much more. I mean, there's a huge difference between walking and heavy hands in terms of energy usage. I mean, it's enormous. And then if you combine that with the cadences, this is, and the verticality, this is one of those things which was very important to Len. And it's in the books. I mean, if you're walking with heavy hands, and let's say you're moving that weight through about 12 inches, that's one thing. You move it through 24 inches, that's a whole different animal. Now, if you start doing double ski poling type movement, which is in his books, where that weight's coming above your head, you're bending down with your knees and sweeping that past and back, that enormous combination of up and down movement is an enormous exercise difference. And he would measure that in the gym. He wanted to see what that meant. And I think it was at VO2 max numbers, his own was something approaching those of an Olympic cross-country skier. I mean, it was incredible, just extraordinary. And, you know, just one other thing that's connected with this. I mean, Len wasn't an exceptional physical specimen, as far as I'm aware. He was a pretty ordinary dude in terms of his physicality. And that's the thing that I admire. I mean, so many exercise programs that one sees, there's a 20-something man or woman who holds a piece of exercise equipment, claims that the way that they look is the result of that exercise equipment, doesn't tell you about all the other things that they have to do to look like that, and then tries to sell you on the idea that at 40, 50 or 60 years of age, you know, three times a day or three times a week for 15 minutes, you can look like that. Well, by contrast, you've got Len, who starts when he's approaching 50 and continues on through his 50s, 60s and 70s an absolute phenomenal physical specimen and continues to get stronger on every measure. That man, he lived his methodologies. He really did.
Tell us a story about the 2 hours of double ski poling. Describe what that is.
So double ski poling is a movement described in the books, but if one can imagine sort of the pushing movement that a cross-country skier does, except sometimes you'll see them do it just before they do a downhill section where they lift their ski poles and push them back. And if you can imagine that, but with two heavy hand weights, where you're lifting your arms above your head, you're bending your knees, you've normally got one foot in front of the other slightly, and as you squat down, you sweep your arms down from your head past. That's a double ski pole. And I'm very careful whenever I do heavy hands with people, and I introduce them to that, to take that very slowly. If I'm working with somebody, I won't even let them do that movement initially, because it's much more strenuous than people think, even with light weights. It's one of the more difficult movements of heavy hands. And I asked Len once about endurance and levels of endurance. And he said, well, I kind of lost my interest in how far I could do that. And I said, well, why? What do you mean? And he said to me, well, he said, and I think it was 7 pound weights he was using. He said, I did double ski poling for 2.5 hours.
And
7 pound weights. And he said, and after that, I felt I tested my levels of endurance. Now, just to put that in context, that's like a marathon runner taking 7 pound weights and using that movement through the whole of a marathon run. I've done double ski poling for a few circuits, but, I mean, it staggers me. And Len was not a huge guy.
He was a little guy.
He was a little guy, but yeah. Immensely strong. And he said, if I can do that, basically, and this is one of the things I liked about Len, because he was sort of practical. He's like, what's the point of me testing it any further? When am I ever going to need to do any more than that? It's like, point proved. It's like, fair enough.
There's a quote in his book how he talks about how he eats like a young colt. Did he talk about how he ate and what was his view on diet that you knew from the conversations you had?
Well, Len likes to eat. And he preferred to eat than to diet. And he preferred to control his weight through exercise. And so many people will say to you, oh, well, you can't do that because you can't exercise enough to be able to do that. And, of course, if you're talking about many conventional exercises, there's truth in that. But when you're using a heavy hands approach, then you can burn a tremendous amount of calories. But I think one of the most interesting and intelligent things that I've ever read on diet occurs, I think it's chapter 15 of his first book. It's called Fat, Fact and Fallacy. And what he basically says, I think this comes from his view as a psychiatrist and working with people's minds as well. He says that, you know, people, they go through tremendous deprivation sometimes to starve themselves almost through diet so that they can attain a certain weight. And as he says, almost everything works at first. But when they get there, it doesn't seem worth it. And so psychologically, this is a very hard thing to maintain. So by contrast, if you're enjoying yourself through exercising and eating, both for health and pleasure, then the considerations of diet just go away. And I personally found this to be true, and I've seen it replicated in other people. And I think everybody would do well, regardless of whether you're interested in heavy hands or not, to read that chapter of his book, if you can get hold of the book these days, because it's a really good examination of the relationship between emotions and exercise and food. And that was very insightful and has been very helpful for me and others I know.
Do you remember the charts in the back of the very first book that gives you all the calorie consumption for all the different heavy hand movements?
Yes, I think that was the appendix with workloads and calories or something like that. Yeah, that was very interesting. And again, as far as I can tell, based upon research, and, you know, he was very careful with that type of stuff. It's extraordinary.
He never reproduced that in the following books, and I was just wondering if you had any idea why that might
I asked him about things like that, and he basically felt that some of the technical information would overwhelm people, and, you know, he was all about doing whatever was necessary to encourage people actually to do it. He wanted to know for himself, and he wanted to make it available, but I think he felt that it wasn't necessarily helping people actually necessarily go out and do it. And I don't know that I completely agree with him on that. I mean, I found so many of those things helpful. My suspicion is, I know from speaking to members of his family that Len left many, many sort of papers, and he had boxes of videos. You know, he'd come up with a new exercise method or an insight, and he'd film it and record it. And I think sort of 95% of those have never seen the light of day, so goodness knows what else was flowed from that very inventive and fertile mind.
Was he marketing and selling those Panax machines?
No. I think actually 3 of the machines were created, to my knowledge.
Did he have them made by a company?
I think he did. He had them made by somebody. And then the sad thing was, I think a couple of times in business, Len had been taken advantage of, and he found it, as the latter part of his life, very difficult to trust anybody. And so he was sort of constantly looking to form a liaison and partnership with various people, but he wasn't primarily a businessman, and he didn't really form a good enough relations. And I think a few of his isotonometrics, heavy hand gloves, Pan X, and some other things as well, he just couldn't find good business partnership to get these things promoted and out to the world.
So were the weighted gloves, was that after the handles were developed?
I believe they were. But again, on that one, I think people have sometimes come a little bit too far. My understanding from talking to Len was these were only to be used for very lightweights, and mostly because one of his favourite exercises was shadow boxing. Almost for that. I mean, I don't think Len ever intended to have a pair of gloves, you know, weighing 6 pounds and 7 pounds. But I think with a pound or a couple of pounds for those very quick, rapid shadow boxing movements, which I have to say, from talking to him, form the core of what he did at the latter years of his life. He would spend 10 or 15 minutes doing short sets of heavy hands boxing, sometimes almost dance movements as well. He liked putting on various pieces of music and listening to them and making random movements. And I think it was for that it was developed. It wasn't really as a replacement for heavy hands. It was specific to that.
I see. I wonder at that time, you know, there's weighted gloves out there on the marketplace, but I wonder if he was a pioneer by weighting a glove. Do you know if there was stuff out there at that time?
I think he had a patent for at least two designs of weighted glove. I looked into these a while ago, and I don't think there was anything like that before. I mean, in concept, it's fairly simple. But again, you see, with Len, it's not just about the equipment. Mm-hmm. It's about how you're using the equipment and what's the intention behind it. You know, if you've got gloves that weighs sort of 20 pounds and you're just walking around with them, all you're going to get is long arms. I mean, you're not going to get any exercise benefit, but if you've got something which is a pound or a pound and a half or two maybe, and you're doing all the movements that he recommends and why you're doing them, so it's not just about the equipment, it's about the intelligent use of it. And unfortunately, still to this day, we would talk about this. I see people with small weights. I see them moving around. I don't see them making heavy hand movements. I mean, at one time I demonstrated to somebody half a dozen different movements, and it was like, huh. And of course, it looks different, you know. You do attract some attention to yourself if you do all these different crossovers and body sways and various movements that are described, but you can always do them in the privacy of your own home or private area. But it's a very freeing form of exercise. For me, very interesting. There's always something else to do and somewhere else to go.
It is. I heard one rumor. I don't know where I read it or heard about it. I think it was actually a call I had with someone who knew him personally and lived in the same area of Pennsylvania that he was from, and he told me that Schwartz, with all the boxing of the lightweights, could punch as fast or faster than Sugar Ray Leonard with 1 pound weights in his hand.
No, I haven't heard that, but it wouldn't surprise me at all. Len was very, very modest about his physical capabilities and developments. Although his daughter, I think it was Jodie Lindner, told me that, you know, going to a beach with him was quite interesting because he quite liked the effect that he would create, because he'd be this older guy, and, you know, if you see him, and then he'd take his shirt off. And she would tell me, people would literally gather around. It's like, hey, you know, Granddad, you look great. You know what I mean? And he liked that attention, apparently. And so as reclusive as he was, he quite liked that attention because he was a living example of it. So, see, one of the things about that, you see, is, and this comes right back to it, Len's methods and his life just blows away all your conceptions of what people are capable of doing. I mean, I actually believe that if people were to adopt some of his methods, we might see sporting careers where people were going regularly into their 40s and beyond. And that wouldn't be anything, you know, I mean, literally, you could take Len along when he was in his 70s to a Marine camp for those young 20-year-olds, and he'd be able to do everything that they could do and more.
And it's proof that your musculature can serve you all the way until your end days. You're absolutely
exactly.
Right.
Exactly. As long as you're not doing things that are because if one goes along and hangs around any gym and you hang around the weight room for any period of time, you find that almost every other person who's been pumping iron for periods of time has got horrendous injuries, you know, knees and arms and shoulders and elbows, and there's so many things they can't do. So it's not just a question of pumping iron and working out with weights alone. It's how you're doing the whole thing. And that was the promise of Heavy Hands, the fact that he could do this from his 50s to his 80s and still be a physical marvel.
Did you ever study any of the research of the advantages, other than the duets and the increase in energy burn, by working out simultaneously with four limbs rather than two?
Well, the only things that I know of are really the studies to do with Nordic skiers. I mean, they are known as having some of the highest oxygen delivery rates of any athletes anywhere. And I don't know of too many other athletic endeavours in which that is done on a regular basis. And so I'm not sure where the studies would come from. So apart from that, I mean, for example, if one takes swimming, well, then you've got that gravity cheating element, which, even though that all limbs are being worked, is not exactly the same. If one takes other activities, which soccer, football, rugby, you haven't got that element being exercised constantly. Can you think of another one apart from Nordic skiing?
No, maybe the rowing.
Rowing would be close. And Len did like to row. That would be a closer one. Again, the only trouble is that the gravity element, because one's pulling against the resistance of the water, and the body is in a sort of recumbent, semi-reclined position, so you haven't got the same advantages of verticality that you see in Nordic skiing.
But there is an element in heavy hands that is present, and that's momentum. So you are walking with the weights, and you are swinging the weights, so we're actually not lifting dead weight.
Right. If I may say, if one isn't swinging the weight, one of the worst things I see people do is swinging weights. You're moving that weight.
You are moving.
Yeah, and that's one of the other things. He didn't like people swinging weights, apart from the fact that you might hit somebody with that, but it was the fact that he liked that that's a controlled movement. You're feeling that movement through its whole arc and plane and everything. And that movement's very, very controlled. And I think that's really important because it's strengthening and stabilizing musculature. It's so remarkable to me that such a sophisticated exercise comes from such simple...
It's so easy, isn't it? That's the great thing about it.
And that's one of the things I like, because I know if I talk about heavy hands exercise to somebody who is rather overweight or hasn't exercised for a long time, assuming you explain to them that they can't start too heavy or too quickly, they can do it without hurting themselves. And I can tell the same thing to an elite athlete, and they can benefit from it. And think if you're asking somebody who's, say, 60 pounds overweight to begin a running program. Well, I mean, you have to be so careful that they don't injure themselves. They have to be taught how to make the movements. Or even if you ask them to go to the gym, you know, somebody has to teach them how to use the machines and how free weights or whatever it might be. And, well, with heavy hands, if they start off with light enough weights to make very simple movements, they can begin. So it doesn't matter where you are, there's a place for you to begin. I don't think there's probably an athlete in the world right now. Here's a bold statement. Right now, if you ask them to do 2.5 hours of double ski poling with 7-pound weights, I bet there isn't an athlete in the world that could do that.
No way.
I don't care where they came from.
Because their arms aren't trained. Their body isn't trained for that long, continued strength exercise.
He has a marvelous example he gave me then one time. There was a young person he was with, I think this was in, could be Florida, but I think it was Pittsburgh. And he wanted to sort of follow Len around, and so Len basically said, give him some weights and said, follow me, and he gave him, I think, like, I don't know, very light weights, like 1 pound or 2 pounds, and, which is what you're supposed to start with. And this was a very fit young man. He said, oh no, and he took heavier ones, and he followed Len, and then Len didn't hear him, and he turned round, and he found he collapsed.
Oh, he collapsed.
He'd actually collapsed, and he had to sort of revive him, and just trying to follow him. And if you want to sort of win $5 at a gym, go along, and, you know, all the gym guys will look at your 1 pound weights and they'll say, oh, I can do that with like 8 pounds, 10 pounds. And you say, yeah, take a 10 pound weight. Here's $5. Let's see if you can keep it up for 5 minutes. And of course, within about 35 seconds, they're done. And so you have to build it up. But the beauty of it is you know, you can recommend an exercise method anybody of any age can do, from the youngest to the old, without hurting themselves.
And the thing is, when you build it up, it may take 6 to 8 weeks, maybe 12 weeks, but once you build it up and you get your upper body and your arms and your legs and they become proficient at burning oxygen, you have built yourself a little fat-burning furnace. So you can go out and walk for 30 minutes, 40 minutes, using all four of your limbs, and... Yeah. I'm not saying you can eat anything you want, but you don't have to diet. As long as you watch it, you can eat a good amount of food and enjoy what you're eating and control your weight.
Yeah. I remember speaking to a gentleman who was older than me. He was from England, actually. He was a big heavy hander, and he spoke to Len as well. And he told me that he'd woken up that morning, and he'd done a little bit of gardening with his wife. And then they decided to go out and take a hike. They were in the northern part of England where there were some hills, and they took a good old hike and came back, and they had a kind of a late lunch, and they sat there and they were discussing, well, why do we do this heavy hand stuff? And they realized so they could do that, so that they basically could have an enjoyable day doing physical activity, enjoying the world and their own physicality, and not feel completely drained and exhausted at the end of it. And it was easy, and that was the sort of the lifestyle payoff and it all came about through little hand weights and a funny looking book and a funny guy. Brilliant. I mean, it's genius. So I'm so glad that you've taken up the banner, because I actually believe that if there is any justice in history, Len Schwartz will be viewed as one of the real pioneers of exercise, and I don't think he gets the recognition at all that he deserves.
I agree. For the listeners listening to this, why don't you tell the listeners what you do, so anyone listening to this, if they're interested in what you offer, maybe we can leave some contact information if they need some help. And how does what you do help someone in their efforts to drop weight?
Okay, so first of all, I'm a hypnosis practitioner, and most of my practice is to do with people who are suffering from chronic illness. I also do some other things like painless childbirth, but I also have weight loss programs using hypnosis. And my weight loss programs feature two key elements. Number one, people don't have to diet, which might sound surprising, but they really don't. They just have to follow four very simple rules. And these are reinforced hypnotically, so no diet's required. And people lose weight, or what I should say more accurately is that they return to their ideal healthiest weight and they develop a much better relationship with food and nutrition. And what also happens is people are always asking me, well, what do you say about exercise? And I say to them, look, I don't claim to be an expert in exercise, but let me point you to some information. And I always point them towards heavy hands for the same reasons that I've previously described. And people that do it love it. The only difficulty has been in recent years is two big problems, which is A, it became increasingly more difficult to get the weights, which is something that you're addressing, and I'm so glad you did. And you made an improvement on the handle structure, which is fantastic. And this is the other thing, and this is one of the things where I hope maybe something can be done. I think both of Len's books now are out of print. Is that correct?
They are out of print. You can find used copies up on Amazon.
You can. And, you know, every so often I go on to Amazon or other places and I buy them up and give them to people. But my copies are now very treasured.
They're getting more rare.
They are. And, of course, you know, when I show people this and they do it and they're really happy with this, because when they're coming to visit me and I work with them on the program, I work on weight loss, you know, they're thinking, do they want to go to a gym or where should they do it, or what do they have to do? And they have the same very negative associations with physical movement that they often have with food and dieting. And so this is like something very liberating for them. And I show them heavy hands and I do a little demonstration of some of the movements and point them to the books. And I'm not saying that everybody does it, but for the people that do, they have a whale of a time. They love it.
That's wonderful. Well, I really appreciate you sharing these stories with me, and I know the listeners who want to know what Len was really like and some of these stories, I think they're going to find this a valuable and insightful interview, so I thank you for that.
It's absolutely my pleasure, and for all of you guys out there, just pick up the weight, pick up the material, start doing it, you'll love it.
Very good. All right, thank you so much. Have a great rest of the day.
Same to you.
All right, bye-bye. That's the end of our interview with an inside look on Dr. Leonard Schwartz, the inventor of Heavy Hands. For more great interviews like this, go to michaelsenoffsweightedhands.com. Thanks for listening.